Hello, good afternoon, and thank you for the introduction. And today, my presentation is going to be about the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. And just to give a brief overview, it's like the World Treaty on Tobacco. So that's where my focus will be today. I have nothing to disclose. I don't own any tobacco company, and I have nothing to do with the tobacco industry.
And you don't even smoke.
I don't even smoke. So, yeah. Okay. This is how my presentation will go. I will go through the background of the project, highlight the aims of the study, share the methods I use for my study, and present some preliminary results. So the study is about tobacco use, and of course tobacco is one of the leading killers in the world. And I like these pictures very much, and this is a picture from the 2010 U.S. Surgeon General report that shows that literally all parts of the body is affected by tobacco use. And so that's a good program for me. And economically, especially when it comes to tobacco, governments are more interested in the bottom line. So economic analysis are taking place. So these are some of the basic statistics or what we call the fact sheet when it comes to tobacco use. In the U.S. alone, it kills about 443,000 people. That's the direct smoking, over 50,000 from exposure to secondhand smoke. And globally, at this point in time, it kills about 6 million people from direct smoke and 600,000 people from exposure to secondhand smoke. In 2008, the WHO estimated that if the trend that we observed or we are currently observing continues, there will be over 1 billion deaths by the end of the 21st century. Because in the 20th century, tobacco killed over 100 million people. So if the trend continues, that's what we are going to observe by the end of the 21st century. And economically, it also imposes a huge tons of economic cost, which is something of interest to government. In U.S. alone, it has been estimated that it costs about $193 billion. That's almost $200 billion, and around the world, it's almost over $500 billion. Okay. So, based upon all these kind of consequences of tobacco use, and most importantly, tobacco has now become globalized. In the sense that wherever you go, you will find tobacco. We have five major companies that dominate the world. All these companies are based in developed countries, which is Philip Morris, BAT, Japan Tobacco. They are all based in developed countries. But at the same time, wherever you go in the world, the last village or the last cottage in the world, you'll find some cigarettes over there. So the WHO came out with this treaty called the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. It was developed in 2003 by 192 members of the World Health Assembly. At this point in time, as of today, we have 176 state parties, and unfortunately, the United States is not willing to sign on. And if the United States is not willing to sign on the treaty concerning disabilities, I don't know how we can get him to get the United States to sign on tobacco treaty. But the treaty is made up of two aspects. We have the demand side and we have the supply side. And all these policies under the treaty, we call them evidence-based policies. And these are policies that we've seen that it helps to reduce tobacco use drastically. And it's been shown in the Western world. In the U.S., in the middle of the 20th century, over half of the population smokes, or they smoked. But when they started implementing these policies, as of today, the percentage of people in the U.S. smoking is around 20% or even lower. So these are evidence-based policies that we've observed. Okay. Now, how did the ratification took place? The treaty was adopted in 2003, and as of today, the only region of the WHO that has 100% of ratification is the Western Pacific. and we have about 80% when it comes to the Americas. So this is the states, regional differences. I'm just comparing differences in the ratification rate, and it's based upon proportion. So what's my research aim? My research aim was to examine the progression of the implementation of the FCTC worldwide, and of course to identify some of the policy areas that need attention. Okay. So these are my methods. This is the first time I think anybody is presenting in terms of research, presenting this data worldwide. The WHO, when it was the FCTC, when it was adopted, it established a unit within the WHO called the Convention Secretariat, and also developed a governing body. And the governing body is to see to it, the working of this treaty. So they always send out, since 2007, they send out questionnaire, and this is about 250 questionnaire items in it, and that covers all these items, cover all the articles, the key substantive articles of the treaty. Okay. So I did some form of descriptive analysis, basically frequencies and some proportions. I did some trend analysis because I have a trade data point. That will be able to tell me how our countries are doing around the world. And of course, I did some geospatial analysis as well. Okay. So these are, I couldn't cover all the, I'm still working on this data, but I just want to share with you some of the key components of the analysis that I did. Okay. So when it comes to the implementation of the FCTC, it's just a straightforward diagram. We have the international aspect and we have the domestic. So under the international aspect, we have the treaty, which was which consists of both demand and supply side policies. It has been ratified by 176 countries. So now we are in the phase of implementation. And in the terms of implementation, we have not just the adoption. You can have it on the books, but you also have to have rules, implementable regulations. So you can adapt it, which is mostly the case. But the second aspect is also very important. But together, you domesticate the treaty. And of course, our ultimate goal is to impact health outcomes through what? Reduction in tobacco use. So this is some of the few articles that I just looked at. And I just looked at it from the regional point of view. So one article is about the issue of taxation. And one questionnaire item was about whether the country combined both specific and ad valorem tax, which I highly recommended. So out of it, if you look at the table, you can see that there is progression. All the countries, we didn't have the baseline data in 2007, but if you look at the 2010 and 2012, you compare both two time points, you can see that there's what a progression from. And at the end of the day, worldwide, there's been an increase from 40% to 60%. So just in a span of about 5-7 years of the law, there's been increase in 20%, which is something significant. Okay, so this is just to give an idea of the geospatial analysis that we did. So these are some of the countries around the world as at 2012 that has combines both specific and ad valorem tax. Then we have smoke-free policy, and smoke-free policy or smoke-free environment has been proven to be one of the most cost-effective ways of reducing tobacco use. And in here, in this country, most people may take smoking in public places for granted, but it's not the same everywhere in the world. So I looked at smoke-free environments, and specifically, I focused on the issue of smoke-free restaurants. Okay, so in out of the 33 countries in Africa, in 2007, we had 18% of the country, but it has progressed to 36%. And you look at all the countries, Western Pacific from 23%, even that's the one with the least margin, but it is still increased from 23% to 27%. And on the worldwide scale, it has increased from 25% to 38%. That suggests to us that there's still a long way to go, because only a small section of the world population is covered by smoke-free policies, and even when it comes to our restaurants. So this is just to give you an idea of the geospatial outcomes of the 2012 data. So you, if you look at it, almost most of the world, except North America, where we have Canada, we have Australia, and of course, big chunk of Europe, and somehow Latin America, mostly is there's still no law, no smoke-free restaurants law around the world, even though most countries have ratified the treaty. Then there's this issue of packaging and labeling, which is very important. Health warnings. Okay, and I looked at the issue of health warnings. How many countries have ratified it over the course of the past 7 years? And in Africa, we have increased from 50% to 67%. The dramatic change occurred in the Americas, where we have increased from 52 to 76%. But on the whole, worldwide, we have increased in 70% to 82%. So where everywhere you go, you see some form of tobacco health warnings. And yes, this is to give you an idea of the areas that doesn't have. The colored areas are usually areas that you have health warnings on their cigarette packages or tobacco packages. And the white one, they don't have any policy governing those stuff. Then another important policy has been the issue of sale of tobacco products to minors. And many people may assume that there's nowhere in the world where people legally sell cigarettes to kids, but there's a whole proportion of the world population or countries in the world where we still have cigarettes being legally sold to kids. But since the treaty was signed, you look at the data, we still have dramatic changes from in Africa, 30 to 56%. Even with the least margin, which is Western Pacific, is still increased from 77 to 81%. And in general, we have increased from 68 to 81%. So we still have 19% of the world population or countries in the world where we still don't have kids are still not protected legally. You can sell cigarettes to kids. So these are just the spatial aspect of it, just to see those countries that sell and legally sell tobacco to kids. So what are some of the conclusions I drew from this preliminary work? I tried to make a table form of how to understand why in some places we have these policies, in other places we don't have it. So what I realized is that in some policies, it just only required government issuing maybe a decree coming out with a legislation, and that's it. Some places, it directly affects the tobacco industry bottom line. And some policies, it needs the tobacco industry cooperation. And some of the policies are also very technical, and some are costly, and the others affect youth. So when the policy is just straight government decision, there's a high level of implementation. When it imposes costs, there's low level of implementation. And when it affects the tobacco industry bottom line, there's a medium level of implementation worldwide. Okay. And so why do we have differences in implementation? This is the book that we published in 2012 to just understand. After over 300 interviews over a period of about 5-6 years and covering over 50 countries, we came to understand that in some places, in places where you have institutions, and in this case where we have the health department controlling tobacco policy, there's high level of implementation. In places where you have tobacco framed as a public health problem, there's high level of implementation. Where you have strong networks of advocacy group, there's high level of implementation. And where the public opinion favors tobacco control, there's high level of implementation. And where they have built a strong scientific base, there's a high level of implementation. So these are my collaborators, and thank you very much for being here.